I'm Jerry Willis, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, March 23rd, 2018. I'm Dave Anthony. How do we make schools safer?
After the last 100 to 200 shootings in the country, nothing's been done.
Andy Pollack's daughter was among those murdered in Parkland, Florida, and he is on a mission.
I'm Lisa Brady. President Trump's lead attorney in the Russia probe quits at a critical time.
The president has legal issues coming at him from a variety of directions.
And I'm Janice Dean. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It happened again Tuesday. Shots fired at another school, this time Great Mills High in Maryland. A 17-year-old student shot and critically wounded a 16-year-old girl, and a 14-year-old boy was also injured.
It's tragic. Our hearts are broken.
But Governor Larry Hogan also praised the school resource officer who was armed and rushed to the scene.
DFC Blaine Gaskell fired at the shooter, and what is described to me is almost simultaneously the shooter fired.
St. Mary's County Sheriff Tim Cameron, that gunman, Austin Rollins, ended up dead. And for those advocating more law enforcement in schools, this helps make their case.
What we would like to see is really at least one school resource officer in every school in this country, at least one.
Mo Kennedy is a former police officer in Hoover, Alabama, now the executive director of the National Association of School Resource Officers. He says only about 20% of schools nationwide have a trained armed officer on location.
As a sworn certified law enforcement officer, it's not a security guard or armed guard, sworn certified law enforcement officer, community-based policing approach in the schools, and it's a collaborative effort between the school district and law enforcement agency.
And this is something that is approved on a local level, correct?
That is correct. That's correct.
So you need to get more communities across the country and not the federal government to want to do this. Is that right?
You know, we really need a combination of the federal government, state governments, and local governments to make this happen. The federal government seems to be really behind the idea right now in terms of providing some funding for hiring more SROs. There are some state governments who had already done that prior to last month's shooting. And then local governments certainly have to step up to the plate as well.
There has also been a call to arm teachers, and there are a lot of people worried about that, not comfortable with that, teachers who aren't comfortable with the idea of themselves having a gun. What is your position on that?
I realize there are politics around this discussion. I'm very much aware of that, but we remove ourselves from the political aspect of this discussion. Let's get school resource officers in place so that teachers are not faced with having to do this.
There are some people who don't believe that any gun should be in school, that once the gun is in school, there's already a potential for danger.
That argument bothers me, because when someone says we don't want more guns in school, you really have to dig into the details of that and separate out what we're talking about there. A law enforcement officer with a firearm, we expect that in our country. It's needed to help to defend against acts of violence. And then one other thing, just having an SRO doesn't necessarily, that's not the only thing we need to do for school safety. It's just one piece of it.
What other things would you have schools do?
Well, I've been concerned for a while about our perimeters. And for most schools, for the majority of schools in this country, the perimeter from a security standpoint, if there is one, really begins at the front door, the main entrance. So if an armed attacker can get that far, they can do a lot of damage. I don't want students to feel like they're going to school in a prison, but at the same time, we want to be able to keep possible attack as far at bay as possible.
Andy Pollack is a father on a mission. His daughter, Meadow, was among the 17 students and adults murdered in last month's shooting spree at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
To explain it, I would rather have to explain the pain, how bad it is, I would rather someone burn me right now alive and they could bring my kid back. That's how bad it is, you know, how I feel missing my daughter that much. So that could put it into somewhat perspective.
That is.
It is losing a kid.
That
just came to me when you were talking about just saying how I feel. And that popped in my mind.
That is pain that none of us who've not gone through this cannot imagine. We can empathize, though, and
And I certainly have.
Pretty bad.
And we certainly have that. And it must be a difficult time. You've been very vocal ever since what happened. You went to the White House. Explain for us what it's like to get involved in such a volatile and difficult debate.
To me, it's not difficult because anyone that's difficult is not working towards an objective of most of people in America, which we want our schools safe. So to me, it's really not a difficult debate if you have common sense. And common sense tells me when most Americans drop their kids off at school, we want them safe. We're not worried about other laws. I'm not worried about gun laws right now. I want to know that our kids are safe. So if someone's bringing guns into it, their agenda is not keeping our kids safe in school. So I don't even know why they're bringing it up right now.
What would you do if somebody said, Andy, you're in charge, what would you do first?
The first thing I would do is I'd get in professional security companies that do this for a living. Like they do embassies, they do security for stadiums, they do courthouses. And I would get their opinion. I would hire professionals. That's what I would do. And you have to also focus on the mental illness because you could find them early in early stages when there's a problem, there's a pattern. But the schools need to be safe, just like a courthouse or a federal building. It doesn't take much to figure it out. The way society is, we need to protect our kids.
You know who was arrested last Monday in Parkland, Florida? Zachary Cruz, the brother of the high school shooter, was charged with trespassing for riding his skateboard across the school campus. Cruz had been warned by deputies not to go there, but he said he needed to reflect. And right after it was announced, 8 state troopers will now join the patrol at that high school. And when students return after spring break next month, they'll have to have clear backpacks and wear ID badges at all times.
They didn't even make those changes till there was trespass. That animal's brother trespassed on school property. And most schools, like, it didn't surprise me because if you don't change the perimeter, if you don't have something set up so people just can't walk on the school, it could keep happening.
You were at the White House with President Trump days afterward. Describe what
that was
like. Was that surreal to be there and deal with all that?
It felt like something out of the Matrix, like I was in an out-of-body experience when I went to the White House. I can't explain. You know, it's just weird, you know, him sitting here with Vice President, the President, General Kelly. And we had a meeting of the minds. He wanted to know what happened. And he was, I met with him. He was like a concerned parent when I met him. Just like, what do you say to a, you know, he's no different than you. What do you say to a dead kid's father?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But he wanted to know what happened. And he was compassionate. And he wanted me to come and talk to him. And he spoke to us. We had a private meeting with the president in the Oval Office. And I respect him for having us come in there and telling him our story of what happened. He wanted to hear. I think we're going to get stuff done at a federal level. I've been working. I'm not quitting. I'm not satisfied with Florida, with the bill that we got passed. I'm going to go federally. I'm going to see other governors. I'm going to hit every state in the country.
Yeah, you have
9 more governors.
You have said you are not going to rest.
No. Already we formed an organization. This is what I'm doing right now. Besides, the governor appointed me on this commission for school safety in Florida. So we're going to get to it's be like the 9/11 commission I'm on now for the state of Florida. So it's going to give me a power to look into all the incompetencies that happened in Florida at that Douglas school, which there was many. And we're going to work on prevention. But as I'm thinking about this, it came to me that, look, the teachers have a teachers union to look out for teachers. The police have a union. The airlines have a union. Children and parents don't have a union to voice what they want. So right now we formed an organization. It's called CLASS, Children's Lives and School Safety. And we're going to be the watchdog for all the parents and kids in the country.
Saturday is the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. David Hogg, a student at Stoneman Douglas High who survived the shooting spree, is helping organize this protest.
They only hear the voice of money and the voice of greed. And that's why these children have been allowed to be slaughtered in our schools, because these politicians haven't taken action because they've only seen the green money that this is, and now there's blood on their hands.
And like the many students across the country who walked out of school earlier this month in protest to honor the Parkland victims, he is also calling for stricter gun laws.
The march, I think it's going to end up in a gun control march, and that's just deflecting from what most Americans want, and that's keeping our kids safe. So I'm not really going to be a part of it. The kids, I told them that where their focus should be. But if they want to march and make noise, you know, that's what kids do.
A lot of people have given them a lot of credit for standing up and making sure their voices get heard after what happened in such a horrible moment in their school. But you think they're misguided in some of their approach?
I don't think. I know. I listen to the kids. Most people, they're misguided. I just don't want to go that route. I don't mind people going that route against gun control. I don't advocate guns, but I just want to focus on schools. So by people deflecting and going towards guns, like after the last 100 to 200 shootings in the country, nothing's been done. So I want to do something different.
Well, I have to admit, I admire you. You put such a horrible experience that you're still reeling from to work trying to make something better in our world. That's amazing. So thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm working on it, and I wanted to get out so people could follow me. I'm building a playground in honor of my daughter. They could help me if they go to remembermeadow.com, and they could see the progress of what we're doing with the playground. It's going to be in the community where I live, and we're focusing on that and this class that I'm forming, the organization that's formed.
Well, we wish you the best on all of that. And Andy, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, anytime.
This is Janice Dean with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
No matter what's on the president's schedule for any given day,
we're doing things for this country that should have been done for many, many years.
Even controversial moves like new tariffs against China.
We've had this abuse by many other countries.
The Russia probe is never far from the headlines.
The president's personal attorney, lead lawyer John Dowd, has resigned.
The special counsel's office wanting to sit down with the president. Unfortunately, his lawyer disagreed. And so the two have been sort of butting heads for quite some time.
A shakeup on the president's legal team as he continues to face and deny a wide variety of allegations, from claims of election meddling collusion with Russia to the battle with a porn star over her claims of an affair, all of it leading one legal expert to say the president is under siege.
I mean by under siege that the president has legal issues coming at him from a variety of directions.
Fox senior judicial analyst Andrew Napolitano.
I believe that they are of such magnitude that they can only divert his attention from the constitutional obligations he has to exercise as the president of the United States towards protecting the borders around him. And by this I mean Bob Mueller, the special counsel, is getting very close to wanting to interview the president. The president's civil litigants, one of them just got permission to take the president's deposition. This means he's going to sit down in a law office or in a room in the White House with a camera on him and answer questions under oath about the intimate relationship he had with a woman 12 years ago. This is hardly something he wants to do in the middle of his presidency. And I mean that another woman who claims a relationship with him, a woman with a stage name of Stormy Daniels, gave what is purported to be an incendiary interview to 60 Minutes, which is going to air on Sunday night, and all this seems to be happening at once. This is not necessarily a good time to be changing lawyers, but change he did when he substituted John Dowd, a very, very nice, very competent, let's go along to get along with the very, very combative, and I'm an admirer of his, so I'm not being critical, Joe DiGenova, who wants to fight the special counsel tooth and nail.
The president telling reporters again he actually wants to be interviewed by special counsel Robert Mueller. Dowd had been dead set against that.
Correct.
Right?
I don't know where Joe DiGenova stands on this, but I do know that there was a deep division in the president's legal team over this issue. So the president has a number of lawyers. He has the lawyers that represent him in the lawsuits against the three women. He has White House legal counsel who are employees of the federal government. They don't represent him, but they represent the presidency. The head of that team is an exceptionally well-regarded and competent Washington, D.C. lawyer by the name of Don McGahn. Then he has his own team of lawyers, which just changed horses from Mark Kasowitz to John Dowd to Joe DiGenova. Now, the president has said, Lisa, that he likes his advisors to disagree. So he likes an advisor to say yes, another advisor to say no, and then he'll decide what to do. That I understand when the decision is political. But when the decision is legal, it is very dangerous for a non-lawyer to make that choice. But that's what you are confronted with when your client is Donald Trump, a very, very strong-willed person with extraordinary self-confidence who does not use an economy of words and who makes his own choices.
And Dowd, while he may have disagreed with other members of the team about the wisdom or lack thereof of the president possibly being interviewed by Mueller, he put out a glowing statement in his resignation saying the president has a terrific case and has proved it to the special counsel and his team in spades. So he's not trying to suggest at all that he isn't on the president's side or that the president, you know, doesn't have a good case.
Let me tell you what I said to our colleague Stuart Varney. This environment of being interrogated by special counsel, his prosecutors, their FBI agents, is about the most dangerous environment that Donald Trump has ever been in his life. This is not an environment that a lawyer voluntarily takes his client to. It is impossible for Donald Trump to talk Bob Mueller out of charging him. He can only make things worse for himself. Here's why. Because the White House has surrendered 100,000 documents to special counsel. They know every one of those documents. The president knows very, very few of them. The president's new lawyer hasn't even seen them yet. They may ask him questions about a loan he took from Deutsche Bank 20 years ago. The first question is, do you remember this? He'll say he remembers it, whether he remembers it or not. And then he may very well give answers that are contradictory or answers that contradict something else he said under oath 15 years ago. Why you would permit yourself to be abused and trapped by government lawyers like this is beyond me. This is what happened to General Flynn. This is what happened to that Swedish lawyer, whose name is now escaping me, in ordinary interviews. This is what happened to Martha Stewart in an ordinary interview, which seems amicable and non-confrontational. You say something that contradicts something else you said, or you step on your own tongue, as we say in this business, and they have you.
How many of these legal issues surrounding the president, though, are just headline noise versus being something more serious?
I don't know the answer to that. That is a great question. But think of what Bob Mueller is doing as putting together a puzzle that has over 10,000 pieces to it. Only he and his team know what pieces they've already assembled. If there are holes in that puzzle, they are going to try and get those holes filled by the interviews they can persuade people to give them. If people don't give those interviews voluntarily, they may never fill the holes. And if they don't fill the holes, they may have no case. But when you give them everything they want, it's to help them. It's not to help you. Now, when that puzzle is going to be put together, how he separates the wheat from the chaff, whether any of what he has come up with is a crime, even if it is a crime, what is he going to do with it? No president has ever been indicted while in office. So all of these are things that none of us knows the answer to at this moment in time.
Do you think the president has helped or hurt himself in the way that he's been responding to these things?
He's hurt himself. Another thing that he's disagreed with Dowd over, and this is quite probably the trigger for his departure, is the tweets that attack Bob Mueller. I mean, Dowd personally talked the president into firing at other people, fire at the witnesses, fire at Manafort, fire at whoever's cooperating with special counsel, but stop calling it a witch hunt and stop mentioning Mueller by name. And the president did stop that for about 3 or 4 months. He began doing it again about 2 weeks ago. I believe John Dowd asked him again to stop, and the president said, no, I'm my own best lawyer. I'm going to do it on my own. I think that these attacks on Mueller, do not affect Mueller at all, but they make the president look petty, and they don't make him look innocent.
Judge Napolitano, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
Orville Rogers is called the running man. He recently set a record for running, clocking a time of just over 19 seconds in the 60-meter dash at the USATF Masters Indoor Championships in Landover, Maryland. Compare that to some of the fastest 60-meter runners in the world, some of whom can do it in just under 6 seconds. Well, that's quite a difference. But it takes on a whole new meaning when you add in the fact that Orville is 100 years old. He started running competitively just 10 years ago at the age of 90.
I competed in the Masters group. That's older men, and the group starts at 35, and in five-year age groups, all the way up to 105, where I am now. So I'm running in the 100 to 104 age group.
Orville says he thinks there are several reasons for his longevity.
I think there are a number of factors into it. I'm a Christian, and God promises a long life. I have a wonderful wife who died 10 years ago. I have a great family. I have lots of friends. And I keep active mentally and physically and spiritually.
He's also a veteran. Orville was a bomber pilot in World War II.
I was training other pilots for nearly 4 years in World War II, based all the time in the United States.
He also served in the Korean War.
In 1951-52, I was a pilot flying the biggest airplane in the world, the B-36. Wow. We had 16 crew members and 16 20-millimeter cannons on each airplane for defense. And we had the capability and we had the responsibility of being able to retaliate against Russia if war had been declared.
You can also add the title of author to his list of accomplishments. Orville's book is called The Running Man, Flying High for the Glory of God, and he says he doesn't spend a lot of time looking back.
I have a total of 18 world records now, and I'm very gratified that God has blessed me with the ability and the motivation to run well.
And with a century behind him, he says he's not done yet. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Download The One with Greg Gutfeld.
I have a feeling tonight I'll probably be eating mortadella on crackers while drinking a Pinot Noir in the backyard.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Janice Dean.
What's on your mind?
My doctor called me at home a couple of weeks ago after receiving my latest rounds of MRIs. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 13 years ago. This test is one of the only ways my neurologist can know for sure that my MS is acting up again. I was sitting at the kitchen table with my neighbor Dervla and my husband Sean, having tea and leftover donuts from our son Theodore's 7th birthday. The phone buzzed and the doctor's office number came up. I had been waiting for a week for the test results. She had them. "Hi, Janice. Sorry to bother you at home on a Friday night," she said. "No problem," I responded. I stood up from the table, and my husband nodded at me. He and Dervla knew I had to go into the other room. I walked into the bedroom, and I shut the door. "So your MRIs came back," my doctor said, "and your brain is clear, but I see new activity on your spine." In patients who have MS, the body's immune system attacks the protective coatings surrounding the nerves of the central nervous system. An MRI can reveal scars, also called lesions, on the brain or the spinal cord. I felt a punch in my gut. I haven't had any new lesions on my spine in years. "Hmm," she said. "What about trying something different? We just did your blood work, and you are a good candidate for an infusion therapy." She went over the possible side effects, including the risk of a possible brain disease that could potentially kill a person. That's a little scary," I said under my breath. My doctor reassured me that I was young, I love her, and active, and doing great. And even if this new drug helped my immune system from gnawing away at my central nervous system for only a year or two before I potentially go on something else, it might be worth trying. Dervla has known about my MS, but she doesn't ask me about it that much. She just takes cues from me on whether or not I want to talk about it. I told her and Sean what the doctor had just said over the phone and the reason why I had to leave the donut and the tea party. Sean got up to go to the fridge and asked if we wanted to switch from tea to a bottle of wine. Bless my husband. He opened the Pinot Grigio. My kind neighbor Dervla also followed up from our tea and wine party, asking if I needed a designated driver to take me to the doctor's office. My husband Sean came with me for my first trip, but I told her she's on the list for some girls' time in the Lazy Boy with my infusion drip next month. That goes for my work family at Fox & Friends. Co-anchor Ainsley Earhart stopped to chat with me in the hallway after she heard I wasn't feeling well, and she said a prayer with me near our office. My senior producer, Kelly Kramer, sent me this email before I went for my doctor's visit. Thinking of you, sending love today, and always many prayers. And Don Prosciutti, our tech manager, who came up from the control room to find me after he heard I had had a setback and just asked to give me a hug of encouragement. The list goes on. These are wonderful friends. Sometimes all we need are a few words of encouragement to get through the day. I'll never forget what my husband Sean said when I was first diagnosed. This illness doesn't scare me. That was after I told him I may end up in a wheelchair someday. And my sweet boys, Matthew and Theodore, they give me strength and courage every time I look into their eyes. March is MS Awareness Month, and I want to spread a message of love and hope to all of those that live with this illness or have a loved one that is diagnosed with it. Please know you're not alone. This is my letter to all of you. My doctor tells me we are close to putting all the puzzle pieces together, and at the very least, getting to an understanding of how MS works and how we might be able to stop it one day. Perhaps there might even be a cure in my lifetime. To those wonderful friends and family, keep those emails, notes, and words of encouragement coming our way, because together, we are stronger. If you would like to find out more about MS, treatments, or how to donate, I encourage you to find out more by visiting the NationalMSSociety.org. Together and stronger. Janice Dean, Fox News.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit FoxNews.com.